Welcome to the Bali Ocean Secrets podcast, the podcast where we, myself, Juliet, and my other half, Matt, speak to the spearfishers, business people, expats, and locals of Bali and tell the story of our journey there. So here we are with episode 2. And this one's all about some of the amazing businesses and business owners we met while we were on our Bali adventure. So here we are with episode 3. And this time we're speaking to some expats about building in Bali. During our time in Bali, we became fascinated with the opportunities to build your own home. We spoke with Edward Dangerfield, who runs Breathwork Bali, a breathwork school and coaching centre based just outside Canggu, because he's done just that. And not once, but he's built an entire community called Desa Lima and is building even more. You can hear more about his business in another podcast we produced, Finding Feel Good. But in our conversation this time, Edward told us a little about why he loves the home he's built.
And what I love is like, this is like built and paid for. So it's like done. No mortgage, rent. So we've got, I've got a 10-year optional to renew on the land. I had 2 months to raise. So I built out like a little 7 or 8 page pitch deck for the project. This is what we're going to do. Stood at the top of the rice field, got my friends together and went, hey, this is the land, this is what we're going to do. And they're like, you're fucking nuts. Half of them were like, yeah, cool, good luck with that. And then half of them were like, they'd seen Jiwa, they knew what I'd done. They could see the vision. And they were like, yeah, all right. 3 weeks later, we'd raise. What we're doing here, we want to put in these cottages and the restaurant. And the restaurant, because we're foreign, we can't really own it. It has to be Indonesian owned. We can't own cottages to rent. So our employee, Sarah, like we're super stoked with her. We're gonna buy her a company. So we're going to make this a 5% cap profit, which means it's going to make 5%, but nothing more. And all the money it makes beyond that is going to go into leasing more land, sustainable agriculture, and supporting local charities. The front, very front area, which will be Leaf, it's going to be this restaurant and a concept store. It's going to be super sexy branding. We're going to basically have opportunity to invest into that. So anyone from our circles of clients and students can invest in. And basically it's a heart-centered fund where you invest in and you get 5% return on your investment. It will fund the build of that, which will be an Indonesian-owned company with this mandate of 5% cap. And it will take people from like Bali street mums and train them and then give them an opportunity to work. And then it's like a halfway training space with awareness of like their sensitivities or their trauma or, you know, some of those pieces that are they're still working through. And so if you go there, you know that 5% is going to a collective of investors who have given their heart to it, and the rest is going back into community. So for me, I want to connect more deeply in those relationships. Like for me, that's a spiritual practice. Spirituality isn't out there. It's in like how I make tea.
His heart-centered fund capped at 5% profit is a seriously exciting prospect. And he talked us through the different housing options in Bali, given the research and experience he's done and has.
The next one is, you can kind of maybe go with something off plan. And I mean, you could also like, you can up that a little bit. Okay. So the next one, I guess, is find your land, lock in your land, and then work with someone like my friend Yeoman, who's an architect here who designed Ashala. And then his firm takes care of everything. So you design with him and then he does the build and then you come back and it's done. And you're like, oh fuck, that was cool. Right. So that's like that's a great option. The next option is buy off plan, invest into something, like double check, fact check, make sure it's actually going to be built. So yeah, you can buy off plan and then they disappear. That's a thing. There's very little recourse as well. I mean, there's a lot of like, there's stories of it. Like they have all of the brand, the merchandise, the like, in vans, the offices. They sell out the full off-plan thing. They don't own the land. They've just done like the render, and they sell 20 units, and then they've gone. Money's That's gone, it. Person's gone, office is gone, all the cars, the decals are taken off. There's nothing. It's an epic con. Yeah, so you just want to make, and this is where like reputable, like if they've done a project or they're in the second project. But then I think it's good to get like land title, and then you want to do it in phases where, well, we take the land now and then we put first payment down. So with my builder here, it's like I secure the land. Every time we build a new building, we put deposit for the materials. Then the materials arrive and then he starts to build and then we stage payments.
So leasing land is our best first step and gives us a sense of certainty with flexibility as far as is possible in Bali anyway. And Edward's given us some good reasons to consider wooden houses for sure. He also talked us through more options for buying in Bali.
The other path for you, I think, is to purchase finished, which is going to be like, I mean, the pros are turnkey. I think that's it, really. You know what you get. You walk in, you pay the money, you get it. It's turnkey. Cons are huge. Like for me, the cons are you're not involved in the design process, which may or may not be important for you, but for me, it's important. And so you don't know the build quality. Like what's underneath the surface is fucking shocking. Like really? Some of these builds are like put together with like flour. It's like, yeah. And just say there's like, I had some friends who they were in a property in Brawa, and it was like their friend had purchased it and then they were leasing it from him and they were in there and it was like damp and then they had to move out and then they started peeling back the walls and it was only like 6 months or 8 months old. And it was like fucking huge amount of work needed to be done. I mean, it was purchased as a buy to rent property and they couldn't rent. So they had a huge loss of revenue. And it just depends on the contractor, right? And it's just, yeah, like some contractors are great and some are just shoddy.
And he told us about his future plans.
One of the things that we also want to do, we being I and some of the team, is Leaf Farm, which is on Putu's land. So he has his land. It's a rice field. It's not doing anything. He doesn't know how to monetize it. I've got to go check it out and make sure it's like epic. And the idea is that we would put on a few of these that would be owned by a collective of a few individuals. And we would have around that a full organic farm. And the organic farm would feed Leaf. And then we would have it on nightly rental, like rotation. Puto owns the land. We would own the structures and there would be a rev share. So he would get revenue from that. Yeah. And then the importance, I think, alongside that is to generate some wealth from the value proposition that's basically better short term. Like as an example, if I was to be renting right now, I'd be paying my landlord.
Yeah.
And because I transitioned out of that, now I'm paying myself. And as I accumulate that wealth, I need to take that and put it into something that might have a legacy piece for my son. So that might be back in Canada. But if I wasn't to do that, I wouldn't have the opportunity to generate the wealth, right? Because I'd be paying someone else. Yeah. So as soon as we get on the ladder, then we start saving all of our own income, not paying someone else's mortgage, partnering with an Indonesian, and then creating a legacy piece, maybe back in country of origin.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, like, I think probably for you still European Union's available, maybe not so much. Yeah. But land ownership's still an option there. Even if you can't, you know, so just for that land ownership legacy piece, like if you wanted to really,
yeah.
Very, very smart stuff. And it definitely got us thinking, that's got to be the dream, not paying rent and having more disposable income for investments elsewhere. Bali really is a special place. And Edward told us a little about his journey there, his vision for Breathwork Bali, and the importance of knowing people on the ground.
Like when that first wave of lockdowns came through here, I was like, fuck, I don't know anyone. And like, if all the shops shut, like how would I get food? Well, I've only been here like at that point, like I would have only been here like two, maybe 3 months. Yeah. Two and a half, almost three. My first year here, I worked in a clinic. And when I worked in the clinic, the first thing I did as I was arriving was establish my own brand because I knew I wanted a standalone brand that built value. So yeah, Breathwork Bali as a brand was established 2.5 years ago. And then it was just a brand, didn't have any legal entity. Sure. And then when I left the clinic, I established it. So Breathwork Bali has been like legal for 1.5 years. What's even wilder is I could go to another country and do the same. Like it's just, a lot of it's about the technique and yeah, the people and the culture. I mean, English is really, being able to speak English is really important, but finding people that are aligned to it. I've had this vision for like 9 years. So I think that's maybe the difference. And I lived in Portugal for a couple of summers. I really wanted to move here. Like Portugal or here would be my two choices. And the reason there's reasons for both, but climate's the big one. Cost of living. The gearing here is so much more effective. But here, like Lisbon also has like a very open, like a lot of expats, a lot of English speakers, a lot of health and wellness. So Lisbon, like on the outskirts of Lisbon or being in Cascais, I could probably do quite well. I just love the weather and the surf and the people. And the gearing here is really good to be like earning in USD and spending in IDR. It's just the reality of it. Like, they're so appreciative of the money, you know? If they've grown up rurally, they've probably grown up like running around a village, like with a decent amount of food, with a lot of relatives, with like pretty simple life, but like safe and content and yeah, not really freaking out for like, you know. And I think, you know, when I grew up, certainly like in the early 80s in the UK and the way that I grew up, like it was a challenge. Like it would like, you know, like there's a lot of like financial struggle. It bizarrely, I don't know if it's the same like quality of struggle or the same like suffering that goes with that, you know? And it's the conditioning, like for me, I love exploring this, but this conditioning around like needing to either be like intelligent or successful or have a certain level of wealth to be able to like have that level of money.
We also spoke with Mary, who runs an ethical jewelry business called Gardens of the Sun. We actually designed some bespoke jewelry when we were with her. And she told us about her journey of leasing and dreams of building in Bali.
I first moved into a three-bedroom villa in Sanur, in the middle of the red light district. And we didn't realize for the first few months. Eventually moved because it wasn't the best place to raise kids. And then I moved to a place closer to the beach, which I loved until it started raining, because to get from one room or from the living room to one of the bedrooms, you have to walk through the garden. And if it rains, you get wet. Also not ideal. So the next place I got, I was like, okay, I want a big living room in a good neighborhood near the beach. And I do not want to walk outside to get, you know, to go to bed or to walk from my bed to the kitchen. I do not want to get wet. So I ended up finding a place that was built by a Dutch Taiwanese lesbian lady who now lives in Vancouver. She was a construction. She was in construction, so she really knew how to build something properly. And we first rented it, and after 2 years of renting it, she was like, "Hey, do you want to buy it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do," because it's actually the only place I've lived in. I've lived in Indonesia for 13 years, and this is the first place that didn't have cracks in the wall all the time. And yeah, so the building standard was just really good. Yeah, so I took over the lease for the land. So as a foreigner, you cannot own land in Indonesia, but you can like rent it or lease it for 25 years or two times 25 years. There's a limit to how long you own it. And then the house that's on it or the villa, it's mine. So I do own the house. I just don't own the land. So I get to extend it. The price is in gold because the rupiah currency fluctuates a lot. So the price is in gold. And I know that I can extend it as soon as my lease runs out. I would have loved to build something as well. My sister actually did. So this is a completely different way of doing it again. So she was living somewhere in Uluwatu, so on the south tip of the island. She really liked her landlord. Like, he was just a really nice Balinese guy. But she didn't really like the place she was living so much anymore, again, because she had to walk through the garden to get to her kitchen. And if you're like us, we love snacking at midnight. So staying dry at midnight is an important criteria. So she agreed with him that she would design the villa that she wanted on a piece of land next to where she was living now or at the time. So she designed the villa and he built it. And she basically just paid 3 years' rent up front and got exactly the dream villa that she wanted. And she doesn't own it now. So she basically just has it for 3 years. But he used the rent to build the villa on it. And he knows that if she moves out, he can, you know, rent it out again. She knows she got a really good deal for a one-bedroom villa. That's exactly the way she wanted it. I think especially living in a foreign country, I'm a guest here. And I do not just want to live here as, you know, a white girl and just enjoy all the good food that Bali has to offer. And just, you know, I mean, I'm living a lifestyle here that I could not afford if I was still living in the Netherlands. It's a lifestyle I cannot afford in most Western countries. And I do not want my lifestyle to be at the cost of other people. It's kind of, I think, like me making it okay being here.
Of course, we have our very own boat in Bali now. And if you want to get in touch with Gus, the captain of Bali Ocean Secrets, and take a spearfishing trip or a sunset cruise with him, you can go to Bali Ocean Secrets on Instagram. Keep listening for episode 4 of Bali Ocean Secrets podcast. We'll be talking ocean conservation with some incredible experts on the island of the gods. Make sure you follow and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. And huge thanks to our guests this time, Edward and Mary.